Hello there. You are listening to In the Books, a podcast about book-to-screen adaptations hosted by the following two nerds. I'm Michelle. I live in the States, and you can find me at Musings on Instagram primarily, but I do have a presence elsewhere.
That sounds mysterious. You have a presence? my name is Rita. I'm at Annoying Rita on Instagram, where I mostly share other people's reels because I don't have bandwidth for creating my own content for that. welcome to our discussion of episode 10 of Normal People. It has been a long journey, but we're on the home stretch now, people. Only two more podcasts to go. I know. I'm exhausted. But no one's more tired than Connell. I think you should know we're going to be discussing the book as well as the show by now. Like, get with it, people. We've been here a while. So, you know, spoilers. This episode of the show, again, dealt with themes that can be very triggering. So if you are sensitive to discussions of suicide or depression, please proceed with caution. We will start, as always, with a recap.
We begin in a waiting room. Connell is filling out one of those mental health questionnaires we discussed last week. As Connell circles the answer saying he doesn't like himself, we get a flashback to Nall asking him if he is sleeping. No, he isn't. And recommending a free therapy service offered by the university. Connell is then invited into the room by his perfectly cast therapist. I want her to be my therapist. Let's see. There is a title sequence, and afterwards, we flash back to New Year's Eve. Connell rings in the new year in Dublin with all his new friends and shiny new girlfriend, Helen. On their walk back from the pub, Connell receives a message in his schoolmates group chat asking if anyone has seen Rob. Connell doesn't seem that concerned and keeps walking. But the next morning, he gets a phone call from Lorraine, telling him that Rob's body was found. We flash forward to the therapy session. Connell is explaining that his own depression began following the news about Rob and the subsequent guilt he felt. He realizes that he was the only one of his friend group that had not attempted to help Rob. We cut to a flashback with Connell and the lads from his friend group discussing Rob's final few weeks, and Connell was very much out of the loop. When he gets home, he sobs in his living room as Lorraine holds him.
We cut to the day of Rob's funeral. As a morose-looking Connell adjusts his tie, Helen interjects with a, "You look so handsome." Connell's instinctual reaction is to look at her like she has lost her mind, because this isn't senior prom, and he isn't trying to look cute. He then makes his way down to meet his mom, and they all make their way together over to the church. As they enter, Connell makes eye contact with Marianne, who has flown over all the way from Sweden for a funeral of a man that bullied her. We can only assume she is there to support Connell, who practically runs into her arms. They hug an inappropriately long amount of time, like, to the point where people start staring at them. There's some great extra work by that blonde girl next to them.
Yes. Yes.
Helen is not pleased. Connell then lines up to offer his condolences to Rob's parents. Rob's dad, whoever this actor is, amazing, is so thankful and pleased to see Connell and seems really proud that he's off doing amazing things at Trinity, but that just reinforces Connell's sense of guilt, so he crumples into a pew further down the church while his mother comforts him and Helen stares with literal gaping mouth, fish-like and completely useless.
Yeah.
We then cut to the wake. Helen and Connell stand together and drink an awkward cup of tea in silence. They're approached by Eric, who asks to be introduced to Helen. Connell, not known for his way with words, forgets to explicitly state that she is his girlfriend. Eric notices this and tries to lighten the mood, and then when Marianne approaches them, cracks a joke about a rivalry between the two women. The members of the love triangle refuse to even crack a smile about this, but for some reason I felt like Marianne and Eric were now besties because they were making a lot of eye contact. I loved it.
Later that night, Connell and Helen lie awake, squished together on his single bed. You know, you'd think he would have upgraded by now, but, you know.
There's no room in that bed. The room is like the size of the bed.
Helen is pissed off and asks why he didn't introduce her to his friends. If he didn't want her to come, he shouldn't have invited her. Connell looks confused at first and then utters the best line in the episode. Look, I'm sorry you didn't have a good time, but like it was a funeral. Helen, who is deathly allergic to reading the room, asks why he wasn't ignoring Marianne then. Connell, whose friend just died, remember that? Asks Helen why they have to have this argument now. Helen refuses to pretend she didn't notice her boyfriend staring at his ex-girlfriend and asks why he has to be so weird around her. Connell tells her that who he is around Marianne is just himself, and maybe he is just a weird person. AKA, if you don't like it, tough titties. Connell heads back to Dublin and is so depressed he can't even attend lectures. He is devoid of energy and focus, and he has a panic attack when he has to leave his tiny, depressing dorm room. One day, as he lies on his bed, the picture of lethargy, he really does look like he's a painting of lethargy. Helen breaks up with him, telling him that she recognizes he is depressed, but can't help. She still has legitimate worries about his relationship with Marianne, and his mental state has exacerbated the problems in their relationship. Well then, okay, fine, Helen. Exit stage left.
Bye-bye.
Flash forward to therapy. The therapist or counselor lady, it's still not clear what she is. She might even be a mental health nurse for all we know, asks Connell about his friendships, and Connell tells her about Noel and his other friend on Erasmus, Marianne.
We then flashback again, oh god, the flashbacks, to a Skype call between Connell and Marianne. As he breaks the news of his breakup with Helen, Marianne claims to have liked Helen. I suspect it's because she barely met her. Nobody likes Helen.
Yeah.
Connell explains to her the strange contradiction of his numbness coupled with his anxiety attacks. It's very hard to process, but Marianne assures him she relates. She then encourages him to sleep because Connell is so, so tired. He then lays the computer down beside his bed and Marianne watches over him while she studies. The next morning, he wakes up and realizes he managed to sleep through the night. A rare Connell win! Yay! We then flash forward to therapy again, and Connell is trying to explain how difficult he finds being away from Marianne. A person who has known such a similar life and whom he feels understands him. The therapist asks if he has struggled to connect to people, and Connell admits it's something he has always had trouble with. Although he might not have had much of a deep connection with people like Rob and Eric, he was accepted and liked by them. He felt that if he moved to Dublin, he might find people that were more like-minded, but he has come to realise that he doesn't fit in here either, and he can't ever go back to Carrick-Lee because those friendships are gone and Rob is gone. He then breaks down and sobs. A breakthrough!
Wow. We then cut to a slightly bleary-eyed Connell walking out of the building and back on, out onto the busy streets of Dublin. He goes back to his room to Skype Marianne. They talk about his first session, and Marianne praises Noel for suggesting it. Marianne then explains that after the funeral, she felt a lot of anger at the way people were writing on Rob's Facebook wall about what a great person he was, and what a devoted son, and all the bullshit generic things people say after a loss. She questions whether any of that was even for Rob. Connell smiles at her getting worked up, the first sign of happiness in the entire episode, and tells her that actually Rob was insecure and obsessed with being liked. Takes one to know one, I suppose. Marianne and Connell tell each other that they miss each other. And that's the end of the episode.
That was a little glimmer of hope at the end.
Yes.
So what did you think? That was your first time sitting through this? I have...
Yeah.
I have dealt with it for years.
That was probably one of the most intense programs that I've ever seen, and one that depicted depression. And I think especially the depression that comes following the death of someone, and the what grief brings into the mix when you are dealing with depression and anxiety. I thought it was brilliant. It was tremendous acting from everybody.
even that blonde extra, yeah, that was like side-eyeing them, like fantastic, yeah, work.
I mean, it was really incredible. How about you? Now that you've seen it half a dozen times.
Yeah, I will say, like, it does get easier to watch. The first time, yeah, I was a sobbing mess.
Oh my god.
And I know I say this every week, but I think this is one of my favorite episodes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's, I mean, this has to be the episode Paul won a BAFTA for.
Yeah, I mean.
Probably, right?
Holy crap. Yeah, he reached in deep into his soul and wept.
I've never seen a man cry so much.
It was painful. Yeah, it was painful. I'll say that the one time, as I'm thinking about it, the one time where I saw a male actor weep that much was the movie Interstellar with Matthew McConaughey.
God, that... okay, here's a tangent, but that movie is too fucking long. What is wrong with people?
Well, all of those movies are too long. But yeah, there is a scene where I believe he is... either saying goodbye to his daughter or something along those lines, but he is just weeping, and I mean ugly cry, you know, ugly cry.
That movie is so long it lasts forever. Yeah.
But that is the only other actor that springs to mind when I think about that expression of emotion that we saw from Paul this week. I don't think it's going to be a surprise who our favorite performer is this week. So, I'm getting ahead of ourselves.
I think he should have won an Emmy for this. I know he was nominated, mm-hmm, and he didn't win, but like, mm-hmm, come on, this is one of the best performances on television ever. I know that's hyperbolic, but I'm gonna say it. And obviously the episode itself was like written as a vehicle for showcasing this kind of incredible talent. And it deals with a topic that is men's mental health that is just so important. I know it's an incredibly sad viewing experience, but I find it like really rewarding to see. I find it kind of validating. And I wish the show existed when I was in uni because I would have felt less isolated.
Yeah.
There's a reason a lot of people's mental health crises happen at that time.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I think, you know, as I reflect back on my long life and think about when my first experience with depression really made itself known, it was in college. And, you know, I remember, you know, wandering into the, you know, the free therapy clinic that they had there to talk about.
The only time we could afford therapy at the time.
Exactly, because it's free.
It's free.
And it's, you know, as I was watching his performance, you know, I couldn't help being, like, put into a chokehold by the memories of that time, as well as other times where, you know, my depression has grabbed me by the throat and had me on the floor. And it was a very difficult episode to watch without having to rewind to catch something because of the tears. You know, I admit that when I turned off the show, I went in and had a little crying fest in my room to, you know, because this is a rough time of year for me. You know, it tears are never far from me during the first part of April. So anyway, depression, man.
Depression. I think, I mean, the first time I watched this was like mid-lockdown, and anyone who's listened to our podcasts knows I was slightly insane then, but like, just listen to Wes Anderson podcast. I had gone absolutely loopy, and watching that episode was not good. I would say I'm better able to divorce myself from the thing that happened in this episode now and be slightly more analytical. But it's very hard, like, because there's not much out there that is this intense and this good, like, as a representation of a mental health crisis. Like, I've never seen anything. Like, I think, like, on Homeland, Kerry had, like, a manic episode depression once, and it was absolute bullshit. Like, there's not good representation of this, and then when you actually see it, A, it means a lot to you, but B, it's very triggering.
Yes, very much. Very much.
Yeah.
But, man, amazing.
So the topic is obviously very important. It's often overlooked, especially when it comes to male suicide rates. I feel like it's a genuine epidemic that nobody really discusses. Men make up 50% of the population, but 80% of suicides are done by men. And I think, like, someone like Rob is such a classic case of a guy who on the surface seemed like happy-go-lucky, bit of a lad. And then you look back at his performance and there's such a veneer of happiness. And then, like, he's deeply insecure and unhappy. There's a bit of a cliche about, like, tears of a clown. I'm not putting that song at the end of the episode. No, Rita.
Thank you. Thank you. No. It's, you know, it is a shame that, you know, we still live in a time where oftentimes the individuals not feeling the ability to confront the fragility that they are experiencing and turn to something irrevocable, how that is happening at all, but especially to men who are feeling like they have absolutely no other outlet for escaping the pain. You know, they can be drinking, you know, they could maybe get into fist fights, you know, that kind of thing. There could be, you know, a myriad of things that they do to try and help ease the pain. But, you know, it is so distressing when that decision is made and we lose someone who had love and light in their lives and were someone who was cherished, you know, by so many people. It just sucks when that happens.
And I feel we've got to create a world where men have the ability to talk about their fucking feelings. There's that cliche on the meme, men will do anything rather than go to therapy.
I
think, I mean, look at how long it takes Connell to reach out for mm-hmm. help. This boy mm-hmm. has had crippling anxiety and depression for years.
Forever.
Like, this is not his first rodeo. And thank God for Niall, because it could have spiraled so much worse. And of course Niall believes in this because he's a medical student. He's actually taking it seriously. Well, you know, so much of the culture would probably be like, buck up now, Connell, you'll get there through
exactly.
this.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you know, it's, you know, you'll get better, you know, blah, 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 you know, that kind of thing.
You're having panic attacks on the floor.
It's like when you are at that point, you know, it's like your brain chemistry has gone haywire. And, you know, there's only one or two ways that you can navigate that to get to a point where you are feeling better. And
you can't just decide to have good brain chemistry. Like,
no,
that's Mm-mm. not a choice.
So
thank you, Niall.
Oh, boy.
I told you, Niall is a saint sent from above.
Mm-hmm. You know, the scene where he is at the therapist, the last time we see him at the therapist, where he, you know, finally just breaks down and weeps, you see that spiral. And it's, you know, it's heartbreaking to see, but it's also, you see the spiral that reaches to the core of what the issue has been for Connell. And, you know, it's in those moments that, as you said, when we were going over the recap, it's in those moments where those breakthroughs happen. And
I love the aha moment where he's walking out of therapy afterwards. You mm-hmm. know, that weird feeling of like, oh, I've just like been sobbing for an hour.
Yes.
Now I'm leaving and the world continues. Like, I've just had this breakthrough. But now I have to go to the supermarket. And the weird ambiguity of that and the feelings.
Yes.
Like, mm-hmm. yeah, he's had a breakthrough. And now he has to get on with his day
mm-hmm.
and use that information about himself. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh,
this
so
show's
good.
So good. So good.
Yeah.
So in terms of book versus the episode, I want to talk about something other than the depression, otherwise I will cry. So the script for this episode is almost line for line exactly the same as the novel. As I was rereading it, I was like, man, they did not change a syllable.
Oh,
I think
why
the
mess
one,
with perfection?
The one, I mean, why would you change perfection? The mm-hmm. one difference right at the end of the chapter is the scene where Connell goes to a literary reading and he meets this author who's like fairly chill, and he gets into a debate amongst his peers about, you know, the point of readings, and they seem pointless to him because it just mm-hmm. seems like navel gazing.
Mm-hmm.
I think the scene is mostly there to serve as a critique of, you know, the literary scene, especially in mm-hmm. Dublin, and the way books are marketed as status symbols, and the way writers, mm-hmm. readers, and critics and publishers really have turned fiction writing into like this purely commercial, marketable product that has no interest in improving the lives of anyone. I think the line was something about like the uneducated people whose emotional journeys the readers enjoy reading about. Which I thought was Accurate.
Yeah.
One of my favorite parts of the novels, actually, because I happen to be of the same opinion, I think the best writers do have political agendas, and it's a shame to not include some of that in the show. Like, this is why Sally Rooney writes. I totally understand that it's completely irrelevant to the main story of this episode, and it might have felt a bit weird. They could have had the scene earlier in the show. It might have felt a bit
definitely
meta conversation to have. But I just think, don't you think it's ironic that they removed the political backbone of this work that is so important to Sally Rooney that it remains in the novel, and then they removed it from the show so that it can be more commercially viable? Like, she's like famously a communist, and they've just removed all of those elements to sell this TV show. Like, it's very ironic. Oh my god.
I mean,
capitalism strikes again.
Yeah, it really is. You know, and the fact that, you know, we hear them talking about communism and things like that, you know, oftentimes within the an academic setting, or, you know, with a, okay, we're here, we're learning about all these things, and what an interesting concept, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, God forbid they take it, you know, several layers deeper into what we had in the book. It's, because God knows we can't have anything that might celebrate communism.
Oh, God forbid.
On the TV.
No, we have to only ever have one political vision, and it is capitalism.
One,
how dare you?
Yeah, one correct vision. Yes.
Everyone agrees. Capitalism is the only way. I just, like, there was this moment where I was like, they've completely. Well, I know Sally Rooney helped write the script, so she was probably very aware that this whole important thread of her work was being removed. And I wonder what she feels about that. I would be fascinated. Can someone discuss this with her, maybe interview her? Hey, Sally, you're never going to listen to this. Come on the show. I would like to discuss the process of the discussion around this, if she had any pushback. This is obviously something she feels strongly about.
Mm-hmm.
And to be made to remove the whole political theme of your novels to seems kind of. Then again, she hooks people in with a TV show, they read the book, and then she's got you with the sneaky communism. redistribute the wealth.
Oh my.
See, I'm right in the mood. Success. Okay.
There we go. Thank you. Okay.
We can do some more with Helen bashing. Okay, Helen.
Wow.
You're capable of reading.
I love what you put in there about, you know, her inability to, you know, pick up on what's going on. And it was, I think it was painful to see the level of insecurity that she had in the relationship. Because
I would be insecure if I was her too.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you see Connell and Marianne together, and you know, it's like, okay, why bother? I'm going to leave now. because, you know, you see the two of them, and it's very clear that they are meant to be together. They're, I don't want to say destined or anything along those lines, but it's very clear that the two of them are like the puzzle pieces that have come together and clicked. And, you know, poor Helen, you know, it's hard to compete with something like that. So, But the lines that they had
to become
the lines that they
petty.
Had her say, yeah, the lines that they had her say were just like so ham-fisted. It's like, you look so handsome. It's like, woman, he's getting dressed for a funeral. This is not what you want to hear.
Just,
you know, like,
don't talk, Helen. Oh. Everything you say just sounds dumb.
Oh,
I did.
But, yeah.
I mean, she's immature, basically, because everything that, like, she's incapable of handling tense or emotional situations. Mm-hmm. She doesn't say the right thing. She doesn't know what to do. She seems to think it's some kind of social occasion where she needs to be introduced to people.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, she's young and I think fairly sheltered, so.
Yeah.
She doesn't. I'm trying to be generous, but it's very hard because I don't mm-hmm. like her.
You know,
if you've not been in those situations before, you are gonna be clumsy and tone deaf. Like,
mm-hmm.
That's natural. But I think that just further highlights the fact that she's incompatible with Connell, who I think is yeah. more mature. And
mm-hmm.
the like, if they were compatible, she wouldn't be pushing all of his buttons at a really tragic time in his life. He's having to deal with, oh, you look so handsome. No, Helen.
No, uh-uh.
No, Helen. And no. then just like...
My friend just killed himself, okay? This is not a time for that.
You didn't introduce me to your friend. He was maybe not thinking about that at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Plus, you know Connell. He's not good about, you know, introducing his significant other to anybody.
That is also true.
It's never been a strong suit of his. So,
just
you
speak
know.
To Marianne about this. I also love that Marianne has no problem with Helen, but Helen hates Marianne.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's something well, delicious about Marianne just being like, like Helen, she definitely does not see Helen as if Helen was more of a threat to her relationship, her connection with Connell, she wouldn't like her. But she right. just sees Helen as like Helen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've said Helen this much in my life. Christ. Oh, Helen.
Well,
we barely
and,
knew you.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye. we'll say beautifully acted, but
oh, yes.
she's gone. Great actress.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Really great performance. And, you know, one of the other things that, you know, we see Connell kind of having to deal with in this episode is guilt. And he, that spiral that he makes in his therapy session covers so much ground.
All of his issues in one sentence.
Yes. Yes. And how, you know, his, you know, initial guilt, you know, feeling like he, you know, he wasn't there for Rob, you know, in his final weeks, that kind of thing. You know, that's his initial guilt. But then we get into, you know, the guilt about leaving Carrick Lee and leaving his friends and, you know, and not staying in touch with them and, you know, being in Dublin and going to Trinity and, you know, expecting to have a similar experience with friendships and not finding that happening. And you know, it's like just guilt sandwich that on rye that is so painful. To see him experience, but it was
so
gratifying.
To have him, like, saying the quiet part out loud for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, it's like it's hard to carry around guilt. I think guilt of any kind. It's hard to walk around with that weighing you down. And, you know, to see him come out of that session splotchy faced because I don't know. We usually talk about like hair and makeup and that kind of thing. whoever did the makeup on him for, you know, the his exit from the therapy session, looking like he had been like crying for days. Bravo. Because
hey,
I think
that might be all natural. You don't know.
That's true. But I mean, it's, oh man, it is, when we talk about ugly crying, that's what we're talking about, you know, and you come out looking like you've been punched in the face a couple times. But
I think it's cathartic,
help,
though.
Yes, I couldn't help but experience that catharsis of what he had just been through. And while I don't think the word relief is the one that I would want to use in that feeling, but I think
it's,
you know,
one
of the
feelings, that there's so, yeah, many feelings.
Yeah. You know, the metaphor of feeling, you know, like a weight has been lifted off your shoulders, and yet you can breathe again, is not something that is too far off when you go through something like that. So
the lesson is go to therapy.
Yes. Yes.
Like, I know that Connell's guilt was misplaced for sure. I feel like he was looking, like he has like a radar for any excuse to go down a self-loathing anxiety spiral, just like ding ding ding, I feel bad about myself. I think when you have such chronically low self-esteem as he does, something like this is just inevitable. It's, of course, it set off another depressive episode, because I think he was, quite frankly, he seems to live his life just trying to
put one just foot in front of the other, you
but
know?
Like, it's always like he just couldn't help it. He was like, how can I make this about how much I suck? This is his whole life. The way he processes life is like some random experience happens and he manages to make it about how he sucks. Like, that, this is just
Connell,
classic
sweetheart.
Connell. Like, this is just a pattern with him. So it's so good that he has gone to therapy and somebody can maybe point out these patterns of, mm-hmm, thinking, and maybe go, hey, before you start thinking this way,
mm-hmm,
recognize that this is a pattern. It's not real. This is a pattern,
yes,
you're creating in your mind. It's
yeah,
just a relief that somebody is there to say, hey, Connell, no. I think deep down he knows that there's nothing he really could have done. Like, he hadn't really spoken to Rob for years. So the idea that he could have prevented this is just magical thinking, and there is no like silver bullet that was going to prevent the suicide. That's just, I think, like, it's a cliche, like, shows, I don't know if you've seen 13 Reasons Why, don't
no,
but it was so problematic because it had listed out reasons for suicide. I think, like, those are, it's too complicated to be like, this is the number one reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Having a countdown for why you would choose to commit suicide. I'm sorry. It just makes me think of David Letterman's show, where he would do top 10
reasons,
countdowns of,
yeah,
all of these various different things. And it's like, this is not something to, you know, no.
Like, the girl would be in any state of mind to make a list in the first place, let alone that kind of list. And she was making tape and recording them and sending them out. That's too, nobody does shit like that. Okay.
I also
get kind of like side eye about, you know, those social media posts like, mm-hmm, reach out to your quiet friend, or in general, always be reaching out to friends. Just stay,
mm-hmm,
in contact with people. It's a good thing to do.
Yeah, yeah.
But
it is.
It's not going to prevent a mental health crisis. And I think we need to maybe be doing things like making mental health care more accessible and cheaper. Things like talking to your friend is not going to prevent anything. So I think Connell is too smart to legitimately think this was something he should feel guilty about. I think deep down he could maybe acknowledge that this is just his self-loathing speaking. Ding, ding, ding. I've locked in on my target, and it is Rob Suicide.
Right.
I have a tendency to over-intellectualize everything anyway, so there we go.
Mary, we are the queens of overthinking.
That would be a really good album title.
Yes. So,
Marianne and Connell. You talk now. I just went on a rant.
I think what I loved most about the interactions with Marianne and Connell this week was, you know, the overwhelming support that we saw Marianne providing Connell. You know, first with that really uncomfortable hug at the church, which I thought was beautifully acted. You know, you could see that, you know, these two individuals, that Connell was near collapse, I think. And seeing Marianne at the funeral and running into her arms was precisely what he needed in that moment. You know, I don't know if Marianne hadn't shown up at the funeral, I think things would have taken a very dark turn for Connell. And to see Marianne just like opening and giving of herself to help take on, you know, take on some of the pain and the turmoil and the struggle that he was experiencing was a beautiful thing to see. And then on the Skype call, when, you know, she suggests that he take his computer over to his bedside table so that they could continue to talk and she could, you know, check in on him while he was sleeping, you know, even though she was in Sweden so far away, the closeness between the two was so touching, you know, and to see her, you know, doing her studying and then looking very carefully at the screen, seeing the emotions kind of flicker across her face as she's watching him sleep, you know, knowing that, you know, there's a part of her that is wishing that she could be there to stroke his brow or something along those lines. And then when he wakes up, he looks and there she is. And she's studying and then glances over and she's like, you know, oh, you're awake. You know, did you sleep? You know, that kind of, it was just.
The more important question is, did Marianne sleep? Because God, that worried about
is
you.
A question. I that is a question. You know, I'm thinking probably not that night.
I mean, this episode and the chapter in the novel really is one of the most powerful parts of their relationship for me. I think, irrespective of the whole romantic element that is messy and complicated, deeply traumatic in Marianne. I think they just have like a deep level of understanding for each other. And I thought the way Connell spoke about how he relates to her was really beautiful. And it is born through circumstances and familiarity because they grew up in the same place and they've known the same experiences. And you can't replicate that with other people that come into your life. But it's also a choice that they make all the time. To the way they speak to each other is probably the most honest and vulnerable they are in their lives. And I think they have a genuinely deep connection. There's this the famous quote that is in the novel and isn't in the show that always annoys people, that I'm not a religious person, but I do sometimes think God made you for me, quote. It's that's an incredible line. But it feels like a genuine thing. It's not, it sounds kind of corny out of context, but I feel like these two people were, like, the only way they can connect is to each other, because they're so messed up in so many different ways, but with each other they find someone that they can feel that connection with. The moment that always gets me is when they're talking over Skype and he's telling her, oh, I feel really tired, and she pauses and says, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that's so powerful to me. Like, just to have someone who has been through the same experience, who understands you and gives you the space to feel what you're feeling without being like, hey, it's okay, go out mm-hmm. and get some fresh air and go for a walk. No, just let people tell you how they're feeling and not force a smile on them. Just let them go to sleep. I thought that scene beautiful. And also I love the show, the technology on it feels real.
Mm-hmm.
When people are talking on the phone, when they're talking on the phone, it sounds like you're talking on the phone. Sometimes in shows there's like perfect clarity, and there's like a slight time lag on the Skype, which felt perfect.
So real. Especially, you know, you think about Skype back in the time when this show is set, you know, and glitchy. So glitchy.
It's still glitchy. Oh, God. Do you remember all of our problems trying to record back in the good old God. Days?
Back in the good old days, yeah. Oh, flashbacks. Okay. Well, we have talked about the performances that all of the actors this week put out in the show. And, you know, favorite, of course, is going to Paul. Everybody else did a great job, but this needs to be in the boys' like Oscar reel. If this was something, you know, eligible for an Oscar, this performance would be the one that they would show for best male performance. Motion picture.
You need to watch the movie where he was actually nominated for an Oscar, because
Yes, I do. I am almost afraid to, because I have been so bewitched by this actor.
He does some dancing in the well, he plays a dad. He does some dad dancing, and it made me love him more. I was just like, No, you unlocked something in me, Paul.
Well, I will definitely watch that after we finish up with the book.
You don't want to cross-contaminate. He's doing a Scottish accent in that, so that's another level of, Paul, what are you doing to me?
Oh, my. Is it All of Us Strangers? Is that the movie?
No, that's the new one. The one he was nominated for an Oscar was After Sun. But do watch All of Us Strangers. I think it just came on Disney Plus. But also, oh God, that's depressing. I don't think he's made a movie that isn't depressing.
Oh, my.
Make a comedy, please. Please.
Oh, dear.
In terms of favorite scenes, all the therapy scenes are my favorite. I just love when he goes on his little monologues, and I think the actress that played opposite him was so good. She really grounds the scene. She's such a calming presence, and he's being so intensely emotional that you need someone who is sort of like really calm and really
mm-hmm.
I love her, and I really just love the dialogue. I think Sally Rooney really captured exactly what Connell, all of the different issues Connell was going mm-hmm. through, and managed to tie a bow on it in one scene. And I feel like anyone who's ever been a working class person who, quote unquote, makes it out, mm-hmm. can relate to this. Like, there's so much pressure to succeed in a new environment that, quite frankly, is just not created for working class people. That it is alienating and scary, and the feeling that you can never go back is universal. So, huzzah, Sally Rooney.
Yeah, yeah, very, very, very well done.
What about you?
I think the therapy scenes, of course, the one with the downward spiral is perfection. I think that one of the other favorite scenes that I had was the scene where Marianne is watching over Connell as he sleeps. I just couldn't help but fall into her deep, gorgeous brown eyes. Yeah. So, I mean, it's hard to pick because there were so many outstanding moments of performance in this show. This episode of the show. Rest of the episode. Rest of the show. Yeah. Samesies. Those are my favorites this time around.
Most of the episode could count as my favorite because just...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Everybody is, like, acting at level 11 in this show.
I think one of my favorite moments was actually when Eric approaches them at the wake. I love the fact that Marianne is now kind of cool with his school friend.
It's like, yes. Yeah, after all of these years, she's just kind of like, yeah, I'm down.
In the book, he kind of acknowledges that she's more socially at ease in that situation than he is now. He's like, feels quite alienated from his old school friends, and she's just like, hey, Eric, be good now. And the way Eric and Marianne sort of made eye contact, like, oh my god, what's wrong with Connell? How things have changed.
Yes, and the turns have tabled.
Yes, the turns have tabled. Mm-hmm. In terms of costumes and hair, I don't really have much to say. Everybody was like in mourning. I mean, Connor was in sweatpants for 90%. He was wearing the same pair of sweatpants.
Oh, but you know, it's like anybody that has experienced depression knows that. It's like, oh yeah, these are my comfy pants, and I'm gonna wear them until they could probably stand up on their own.
I hope he's washing them,
and I just don't care.
This week, I noticed that Marianne's bangs were different.
Mm-hmm.
Groundbreaking news. Different bangs. In Dublin, she had the traditional straight blunt bangs. Mm-hmm. And then in Sweden, they've like softened up a little bit. I was back to thinking, should I get bangs? And then I was like, no, the upkeep.
Did you? Yeah. You just kind of have one of those momentary experiences where it's like, oh, bangs. And then you go, no, uh-uh. Because once you do that, it's like you're in for a year or two of growing them out.
Mine grow out in like 2 weeks. I think that's the problem. Like,
really?
I'm Portuguese. We're a hairy nation. I am batting the hair away. So I'd have to like get them trimmed too often. Like, I have had bangs before, and I just found that like, A, I can't trim them because I'm terrible at cutting my own hair, like really wonky. And then like booking it in all the time. Ugh, this is
such a
first world problem. How is Marianne's hair always on fleek? Oh yeah, she's rich. That's the...
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm.
She's able to, you know, go and have someone do it.
It does make sense that in Sweden they would give her like the best haircut ever. Because they're so like high fashion there. We love you, Sweden.
Did not know that.
Cool trends are coming out of Scandinavia.
Wow. Okay.
Plus, they do white people hair so well.
There are a lot of white people over there.
Yeah. Okay. Location.
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought the room where he was having his therapy sessions was so gorgeous.
I love that you think that, and I look at it and I'm like, that's just a generic mental health building.
Well, you know, it's like it was huge, and you know, I was just thinking to myself,
well, it's Trinity, baby, man. They got that money.
Maybe that's it, because you know, I'm thinking back to my experience at college, and yeah, it was a little tiny dark room. But
just so like add to the depression, they stuck you away in the corner.
Exactly. I thought that I always love when they do an exterior shot of Dublin and Trinity, because it's really beautiful and vibrant, and you know, I could see why Connell would
I do the same
feel so alienated there, you know?
It's just so busy compared to Carrickley. Yeah. You know, I noticed this time, for some reason, like that room and the whole hallway and everything leading up to the office, it was very blue and yellow. And then at the funeral, everyone mm-hmm. was wearing blue and yellow jerseys for the football team, and I was like, that has got to be intentional, like this is not a color scheme that is typical of this show, and then suddenly everything is blue and yellow everywhere.
This is not IKEA.
Oh my god, also Swedish, it's full circle. Yes, it's like he's being he's haunted by Rob and Marianne. Or the absence.
Oh boy.
I also noticed Connell and Helen walked past the Temple Bar in the beginning of the episode. Mm-hmm. Iconic landmark in Dublin.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like the first tourist trap location we've seen on this show. So I was like, yes, I recognize that. But I call bullshit on that street being so empty on New Year's Eve show. That's not likely, is it? There will be drunk people there until like daybreak.
Uh-huh.
How dare you try and pull that? but I suppose they wanted to try and find something that looked kind of Christmassy and New Year's Eve-y, and that mm-hmm. famously they always have their Christmas lights on. So they were like, that'll do.
We don't even have to string anything up. They've already got it set up that way. So, oh man, saving on production costs.
Okay, we'll go past anything you didn't like, because we like everything. Yeah. How many communist manifestos?
Five. Five.
An unsurprising end to this section. Okay. Inbox. Hi, Rita and Michelle. Oh my goodness, talk about an acting Tour de France. Force. What did I say, France? Help me!
Tour de France!
Tour de France is...
Tour de Force.
No, but Tour de France is, I think, the bicycle cycling.
Yes, it is. It is. It's like Paul Mescal gets the yellow jersey.
Oh my god, he should make a cycling movie. Okay.
Yeah, that would be good.
He's got the thighs for that.
Sorry.
Anyway, talk about an acting Tour de Force. Paul Mescal was amazing. Shocked face. He must have been exhausted after those scenes with the emotional and at times gut-wrenching sobs. His portrayal of a soul potentially breaking is outstanding. Seriously, no awards for this show? I think I've been over the amount of awards. Listen to episode one again. Lots of awards. All of the awards happened except the Emmy. His confession about not fitting in anywhere was heartbreaking. Not because it was or wasn't true, but because it hits you that so many people have been in the same deep feelings at some point in our lives. He is grieving for himself, I believe, and a little bit for Rob. Grieving is difficult and different for everyone, and it's generally through this process that one starts to question their own life and where they fit it in it. This, in itself, is totally normal, but it's how we process the thoughts and the feelings we have during this time that help guide us to the end of the tunnel. Some people navigate it well, others not so much. But at the core of it, we need others to help us make sense of it all and support us through. Thank goodness he has Marianne, Niall, and the counsellor. Many people do not. I'm glad Connell has had this kind of unburdening, as much as it is painful to watch. He obviously had this bubbling along for some time. The transition from childhood to young adulthood is probably the biggest single change in one's life when you are tested and held accountable in all aspects of your life. Aspirations, yours and others for you, emotional development, expectations, your own and society's, etc. It's a lot to navigate, and as we can see, even the nicest and well-liked person can be thrown into turmoil. But ultimately, I'm hoping this will help build Connell's resilience and realise that what and who is important to him. Comparing the book to the show, I found the whole scene with the counsellor is almost verbatim, but it's the tone and emotional resonance with Paul's performance and the beautiful cello music underscore that makes the on-screen version vastly superior and poignant. Another beautiful aspect to this episode is the loving and caring way that Marianne talks and counsels Connell over Skype. Watching him sleep just seems so genuine and caring. Well done, Marianne. Exactly what a caring and loving person should do. See, she isn't as broken as she believes herself to be. I know I asked for peace and love and figs last week, and you suggested I might not like this episode, but it was amazing and I loved it. Bit exhausted now. Going to recline on my chaise lounge. I never know how to say that. Now, Ciao, Maria.
Oh, thanks,
Thank you, Maria.
Maria.
That was such a nice, beautifully written email.
Yeah. Okay, so what do we have in store for us for episode 11? In Sligo, Marianne and Connell try to navigate friendship. A fight between Marianne and Alan causes a rift in her family. If you are reading along with the episode, then this episode covers 223 to 253, or chapters 17 and 18 in the audiobook. Oh boy.
Okay, and again, do not watch this in a public place.
Yeah.
It is not safe for work.
Mm-mm.
Okay, so that's all from us. This podcast is over. We will be back next week discussing the penultimate episode. Can you believe?
I know.
We're finally here. We've made it over the hill. It's all downhill from here. No, it's actually a really good episode. If you want to get involved in the podcast, you can email us at inthebooksnetwork@gmail.com. We are on Instagram, so please follow if you want fun bonus content, updates on podcasts. And if you enjoyed the pod, please rate, review, tell your friends, make them watch Normal People. Thank you, and see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
I lost a friend, like keys in a sofa, like a wallet in the backseat, like ice in the summer heat. I lost a friend, like sleep on a red eye, like money on a bad bed, like time worrying about every bad thing that hasn't happened yet. I know I'll be alright, but I'm not tonight. I'll be lying awake, counting all the mistakes I've made, replaying fights. I know I'll be alright, but I'm not tonight. I lost a friend, I lost a friend, I lost my mind. And nobody believes me, saying no that he don't need me. 'Cause he made a little too much money to be 20 and sad. And I'll be fine without him, but all I do is write about him. How the hell did I lose a friend I never had? Never had. I'm on the mend, like I'm wearing a neck brace, like I'm sleeping at my own place, like I'm pulling all the stitches out of my own face. I'm on the mend, like I'm icing a new spring, like I'm walking on a new cane. Like it's been a couple days since I slipped and said something sorta like your name. I know I'll be alright, but I'm not tonight. I'll be lying awake, counting all the mistakes I've made, replaying fights. I know I'll be alright, but I'm not tonight. I'm on the mend, but I lost a friend, I lost my mind. And nobody believes me, say I know that he don't need me. Cause he made a little too much money to be 20 and sad. And I'll be fine without him, but all I do is write about him. How the hell did I lose a friend I never had? I'd apologize if I thought it might make a difference or make you listen. I'd apologize if it was black and white, but life is different. Just try to listen to me now. I know I'll be alright, but I'm not tonight. I lost a friend, I lost a friend, I lost my mind. And nobody believes me, say I know that he don't need me. Cause he made a little too much money to be 20 and sad. And I'll be fine without him, but all I do is write about him. How the hell did I lose a friend I never had? Never had.